Jesus said, "Truly I assure you, whoever does not enter the sheepfold through the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a marauder. The one who enters through the gate is shepherd of the sheep. The keeper opens the gate for him. The sheep hear his voice, as he calls his own by name, and leads them out. When he has brought out all those that are his, he walks in front of them, and the sheep follow him, because they recognize his voice. They will not follow a stranger. Such a one they will flee, because they do not recognize a stranger's voice." Even though Jesus used this figure with them, they did not grasp what he was trying to tell them. He therefore said to them again, "My solemn word is this: I am the sheep gate. All who come before me were thieves and marauders, whom the sheep did not heed. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be safe. He will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and slaughter and destroy. I came that they might have life and have it to the full."
There's probably no image in the Gospels more beloved than that of the Good Shepherd. Innumerable are the artists who have represented him. Innumerable the occasions when one or other of the musical versions of David's psalm have been played and sung for church occasions, particularly funerals. "Oh, not the 23rd psalm, please," sighed one parish priest in exasperation, understandably, but he could not refuse. There's something inherently comforting in the biblical image. And though the readings are different for the three-year cycle, the Gospels for the fourth Sunday of Easter are all taken from the same chapter of John, and the day is generally known as Good Shepherd Sunday. The idea of God as the Shepherd of Israel appears constantly in the Old Testament, writes a modern commentator, but, he goes on, it was never worked out so fully as here. For those listening to our Lord, the reference to sheep and shepherds were very familiar. But even for a 20th century traveller in the Holy Land, it would not have been surprising. H.V. Morton was there in the 1930s.
On the roads of Palestine and on the hills, you see the Good Shepherd. He comes along at the head of his flock, generally carrying over his shoulders a lamb or an injured sheep. No animal mentioned in the Bible can compare in symbolical interest with the sheep. I believe it's mentioned over 500 times. As you cannot go very far along the roads in Palestine without encountering the figure who, staff in hand, symbolizes the love and compassion of Jesus Christ.
The Greek word aule, or enclosure, originally meant the vestibule or porch of a temple. In the agricultural world, it means the space defined by a dry stone wall covered with thorns or branches. In our Lord's time, this enclosure was common to the whole village. At night, the various shepherds would bring their flocks to the fold, which was guarded by a custodian or keeper. At dawn, the shepherds returned, and the keeper opened the gate for each one, whom he knew, as also the sheep, who, as the Gospel says, hear his voice as he calls his own by name and leads them out. This is another detail which might be foreign to us. As the Gospel has it, when he has brought out all that are his, he walks in front of them, and the sheep follow him because they recognize his voice. H.V. Morton commented on this pastoral custom and the rapport between the shepherd and his flock.
He never drives them as our own shepherds drive their sheep. He always walks at their head, leading them along the roads and over the hills to new pastures. Our principle of droving is something that neither Arab shepherds nor their sheepdogs understand. It's all done by word of mouth, and the sheep follow their shepherds like dogs. The Arab sheepdog is used, therefore, not to drive sheep, but to protect them against thieves and wild animals.
Not for these sheep, then, the tragic destiny of the newborn lamb in this poem by Ian Sorelia entitled The Fox.
First lambs have come. Late snowfall to the hill. All day he watches, feeding on greed till stars in the April sky, he steals shadowy down the valley side. Furtive wades marsh myrtle, and by screen of heather comes where flocks graze. Trembling for quarry, he scans each plucking lamb, chooses, pauses strong as a spell, then flashes to revelry. The lambless ewe sputters down the slope, home over bristly ridge, in one sweep he covers the gliders, then deviously to his deep mountain den, safe down crevice drop, where no terrier dares. On his morning round, death in wool embers is the shepherd's find.
Another peculiarity of the Palestine shepherd was noted by H.V. Morton, and that was the way he communicated with his animals.
As he goes, he sometimes talks to them in a loud sing-song voice, using a weird language unlike anything I've ever heard in my life. I was on the hills at the back of Jericho. It was uncanny because there was nothing human about it. The words were animal sounds arranged in a kind of order. No sooner had he spoken than an answering bleat shivered over the herd.
Whenever I think of an Old Testament prophet, the image that presents itself is invariably that of a wild-looking, primitive creature, bearded, emaciated, and generally rather daunting. As for Ezekiel, even his name sounds gaunt, and with his valley of dry bones, well, and yet in a rather splendid book I have, with brilliant modern illustrations, there he is. Bearded, yes, with thick eyebrows and great dark eyes and skin that looks like parchment. But what is he holding under his blue cloak? A lamb, no less. For there, among the exiles in Babylon, on the banks of the river Chebar, God spoke to Ezekiel and ordered him to prophesy against the shepherds of Israel who have neglected their flocks.
Shepherds, the Lord Yahweh says this. Shepherds ought to feed their flock, yet you have fed on milk. You have dressed yourselves in wool, you have sacrificed the fattest sheep, but failed to feed the flock. You have failed to make weak sheep strong, or to care for the sick ones, or bandage the wounded ones, bring back strays, or look for the lost. For lack of a shepherd they have scattered to become the prey of any wild animal. My flock is straying this way and that, on mountains and on high hills, scattered all over the country. No one bothers about them and no one looks for them. Well then, shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. Since my shepherds have stopped bothering about my flock, since my shepherds feed themselves rather than my flock, I am going to take my flock back from them. I am going to look after my flock myself, and keep all of it in view. As a shepherd keeps all his flock in view when he stands up in the middle of his scattered sheep, so shall I keep my sheep in view. I shall rescue them from wherever they have been scattered during the mist and darkness. I shall feed them in good pasturage. I myself will pasture my sheep. I myself will show them where to rest. It is the Lord Yahweh who speaks. I shall look for the lost one, bring back the stray, bandage the wounded, and make the weak strong. I shall watch over the fat and healthy. I shall be a true shepherd to them.
And so it is Ezekiel who announces the promise of the Good Shepherd, whom God will send to Israel. And it is this prophecy, writes a modern scholar, which seems to dominate our Lord's thought in this parable. Not only does Jesus tell his listeners that he is the Good Shepherd, but he is also the gate of the sheepfold. In biblical tradition, we're told, the gate symbolized access to heavenly realities. When Jacob woke from his dream of the ladder between earth and heaven, he declared, "Surely the Lord is in this place. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." These words of Jacob are used in the liturgy of the dedication of a church, while Ezekiel's prophecy is linked to the Jewish feast of Hanukkah, Festival of Lights, which commemorates the rededication of the temple after its profanation by the Syrians. Probably more familiar to most of us than Ezekiel is Isaiah and his prophecy of the Messiah.
He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young.
In the very last chapter of John's Gospel, Jesus passes on to Peter the charge of his flock when he says to him, "Feed my lambs and feed my sheep." Pope John the 23rd was especially conscious of this charge given to every pope.
The task of shepherd of the whole flock is very dear to my heart. Other human qualities, knowledge, diplomatic tact, organizational gifts, may embellish and add to pontifical government, but they can in no way substitute it. The shepherd's way, the pastor's way, is this: to count his sheep one by one.
And to close, let's listen to part of this atmospheric poem by Rose Macaulay, entitled simply, Driving Sheep.
The green east flows with the tides of the rose between the bars of night, half-drawn. The moon shines cold and faint on the fold where sheep glimmer, grey in the dawn. All thin like a dream their sad cries seem, caught high above time and space, and old as the world, from out fleece dew-pearled, gazes each meek sheep face. Dazed with sleep and numb, the sheep women come and open the field gate wide. The sheep surge out in an idiot rout, like grey foam swept on a tide. Keep steady, move slow, we've 3 miles to go to Grantchester from Chalkfield Pen. Herd them up all the way, lest some go astray of our imbecile 20 and 10. Unreasoning, blind, each poor unhinged mind takes its thought from the sheep next ahead. Through each hedge gate, if you reach it too late, they charge, wild and pale, like the dead. Their lilting bleat, their sharp scuttling feet, are strange, strange as dreams before day, and counting the sheep, we sway into sleep. And trail along, foolish as they.